Blog Talk Radio.
Happy Monday, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to the HD View. This is Melissa Biliardi, your host, and tonight our call-in numbers are 310-982-4227 and 877-497-4103. When you call in, press 1. Our wonderful producer, James, will cue you into the show. Please tell all your friends, family, and colleagues about Health HD, the HD View, and click follow on our show page to get email reminders of upcoming episodes. You can listen to the show right from iPhones or Androids. We are literally at almost 17,000 listeners now, so thank you to all of you, our amazing listeners, for your support. Huntington's disease, HD, is a hereditary and terminal disease which destroys neurons in the brain and slowly diminishes the affected person's ability to walk, talk, and reason. In time, they will rely completely upon others for everything. HD devastates entire families emotionally, psychologically, socially, economically, generation after generation. Every child of someone with HD has a 50% chance of inheriting the gene mutation for both HD and JHD. JHD, juvenile Huntington's disease, is more rapid and virulent. They do experience many additional traumatic symptoms like a quicker decline in scholastics, adverse behavior, seizures, dystonia, and other very severe and painful conditions. Our JHD warriors need much, much more support and resources. Tonight, our incredible special guest is a very, very dear friend of mine, of ours, Meta O'Rear. She is an intuitive life coach. She empowers those seeking a fresh perspective to recognize their strengths and gifts. Meta received her coaching certificate from the Fowler Wainwright Institute in 2009, and she also has studied The Art of Listening with Joya French of Inner Alchemy. And she says the best part of being a coach is watching her clients' success. She gets to be a cheerleader, and she is their biggest fan. So we'll be right back after this quick break. Welcome, everyone, to the HD View.
Thank you.
on. Welcome to all of you new people out in the chat room, and thank you for tuning into the show. I appreciate you calling in or listening in on your phone and your computers. Meta O'Rear is a very dear friend of mine from Northern California, and I want to welcome her to the show. How are you tonight, Meta?
Hi, Melissa. I'm good. How are you?
Good, good. Are we okay with the phone situation?
We're okay for the moment with the phone situation, and if I have to Skype in a few minutes, you'll hear.
Okay. We're having a little technical difficulties here, but we'll make it through. So, you know, my intro was very brief, but tell me, can you tell me a little bit more about what you do?
Sure. I call myself an intuitive life coach. So I have my certification in life coaching from the Fowler Wainwright Institute. I got that in 2009, but before that I had studied with my mentor, Joya French, the art of listening. And so I bring that training into my coaching, but I also happen to really love the intuitive part. So I'm able to bring in, you know, if my clients need something a little bit extra that's not really what you'd think of as being normal coaching, then, you know, I can do intuitive readings or just do sort of hands-on sensing their energy and see, you know, what it might be that they could let go of in order to feel better.
Right. Now, you do Reiki.
And I do Reiki, so that's my name.
Yeah. So explain to our listeners, if they don't understand what Reiki is, explain to them what that is.
Reiki is a method of relaxation, and what happens is the practitioner, that would be me, you just lay your hands gently on a person, and their job, the client's job, is just to relax. And what happens then is, as the body relaxes, the emotions relax, even the, you know, the mind relaxes a little bit, and it's just such a wonderful way to rejuvenate. It's really, you know, at the end of a session, if someone isn't completely asleep because they've relaxed so much, they feel really energized.
Well, now, you've done some Reiki on me and James, my son, and it is just so relaxing. You can almost go into a different, almost like a trance in some ways, which we're going to be talking a little bit more about, you know, meditations and that kind of thing tonight, too. But what are some of the other things that you can, the other tools that you can share with your clients?
Well, I do some tarot readings, and now people always often get a little tweaked when they hear that, but it's not fortune telling. That I've learned it in the way that I do it, it has much more to do with synchronicity, what Carl Jung called synchronicities. You look at the image on a card and you pay attention to what thoughts come up or how you react to it. That's the message that you're getting. That's the thing you need to be working on. And it's interesting to me. I love this stuff. Rational mind would say, oh, this couldn't possibly be true. But in your heart, you know that the card that you've picked is exactly the right one.
Right.
No real explanation except that I think the subconscious mind has chosen exactly what it wants you to to the surface. So it's,
why do you think tarot has gotten a bad rap?
There have, you know, telling the future, trying to predict the future or trying to manipulate the future, is not, how do I want to say this? It's not a positive thing. You know, what we want to do is look at where is our own personal growth? Where is it that we can evolve, which will ultimately affect the future, but not to go in and say, okay, am I going to meet, you know, a tall, dark, and handsome man tomorrow? That's, you really, I believe you can't do that, because whether you meet that tall, dark, and handsome man tomorrow depends on what you do today. So, but people, fortune telling, you know, you think of gypsies and all kinds of crazy.
Right. Well, based on our personal choices, too, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know for many, many years I used to hear my mother say, my grandmother say, well, it's just not in the cards. You know,
yeah.
I was thinking, okay, what kind of card game are they playing? You know, I never understood what it really meant until, you know, looking into it more. But it's very interesting to me, too. So anyway, then what is tapping? What does that do?
Tapping is also known as EFT, or Emotional Freedom Technique. And actually, if you look up, if anybody's interested in following through on this, it's fantastic. Nick Ortner is the guy who right at the moment is running the show on tapping. And it's where you tap on the body, on the hand, the shoulders, points on the neck and the head. And what happens is that you're tapping on, you know, like acupressure or acupuncture points, meridian
mm-hmm.
points,
mm-hmm.
in order to release emotional blocks. And must tell you, I was tapping before we came on the show for a few minutes because
mm-hmm.
I tried not
nervous.
To be nervous. And what it does is it blocks the body's reaction to a memory. So I have a memory, a scary memory of an event, that every time I replay it, my body has an increased physiological reaction to that memory and to that event. So if I can break the connection, then I can stay calmer when I think about this event, and eventually whatever emotional trauma I'm feeling around it dissipates.
Wow.
So they're using EFT now. Their most recent project is working with veterans for post-traumatic stress disorder,
uh-huh.
and they're having really great success with it. So I recommend, I use it with my clients. I don't teach it, so if anybody is interested, just look up EFT and Nick Ortner, or tapping. It's really
Nick Ortner. Okay, we'll look that up. Maybe James can see if there's a website we can plug into the chat room. Well, okay, Namet, I've known you for quite a while, but other than your experience with my family, me and my son, can you talk about your other experiences with AT? Because you do have other experiences.
You have other experience. My connection with you and your son was the first connection with HD, a family that I knew had HD.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that I actually had dear friends who had it in their family.
Wow.
And it wasn't until I was coming down to see you and put on a program about labyrinths and meditation, you know, which I was very excited about. So I told my friends, and they all just kind of looked at me. And it wasn't until, you know, here I am, I felt like such an idiot telling them what HD was, you know, my perspective on what was happening at the time, about how the brain does this and that. And nobody said anything.
Mm.
After I came back from seeing you, months later, finally, one of them said to me, you know, my husband's family has it. His brother has it.
Oh, my gosh.
The brother, you know, everybody was led to believe that he had, you know, a wild and crazy youth, and this was, you know, nerve damage due to drug addiction or something, which, of course, was a total lie. I was floored. I could not believe that here I had these people that I dearly loved with this, and that they had the isolation and the hiding. I was just shocked. So, you know, other things have come.
Yeah.
Right. The one particular, I want to call him a young man, but he's my age, had an experience in the last year where all of the symptoms that one has with advanced HD were just exacerbated.
Mm.
And reasons for it were because he was forced to do something that he really did not want to do. And he had to go to it. Mm-hmm. Okay. What he kept saying was, you know, don't touch me. So here he is in this reunion with people he hasn't seen for years, and what are they doing? They're rushing up and hugging him.
Oh, gosh.
Well,
yeah.
You know, it was just one of the reasons, actually, let me say this, one of the reasons that I'm so pleased to be on this show is to try to prevent this sort of thing from happening again and to
mm-hmm.
try to let everybody know that this is not something that has to be hidden. Your show,
yeah.
And then we have a face and the show, and all of these things are so wonderful because the shame and the humiliation that my friends have felt around this disease is ridiculous.
I know.
And so, you know, anything we can do to, now you can't normalize it, but to make it acceptable.
Mm-hmm.
And bring it out into the light is so valuable.
It is. I agree. That's why I'm, doing the show.
Yeah.
That's why James is doing the film, and that's why, Clarice is doing everything that she can
mm-hmm.
to bring light to our world,
Right. Which is, it's been so much dark, so hidden, and so light in any way you can think of defining that word.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, I learned with my friends, I learned more about the progress of this disease and how in our society we have hurt the community by making it so isolated.
Mm-hmm. Looks like James found the link to the tappingsolution.com.
Mm-hmm, that's it.
Okay, Nick Ortner, O-R-T-N-E-R. I'm wondering if you can put that into the, there it is. Okay, so if y'all are interested in, this sounds like a good thing to do. I think I've tried it before, but I didn't realize the importance of it.
It's so easy.
It's really easy to do.
It's something that makes it, that's easy, because if it's not easy, you can't do it.
And, you talked about post-traumatic stress disorder in our veterans. I mean, that's probably rampant, but
mm-hmm.
our HDers also have post-traumatic stress disorders because of, some of the things that maybe have triggered their onset, or like my
mm-hmm.
son fell off of a wine tank, 15 feet off of a wine tank onto the floor.
Uh-huh.
He has a post-traumatic stress disorder just from that.
Uh-huh.
You know.
It'd be really worthwhile trying. You never know
mm-hmm.
because it's so individual. So unique. Some things will work for one person and not for another. So the tapping may be great for someone. I would say particularly for caregivers, tapping is really excellent, a way to release, some of the anxiety around your obligations. It may be valuable at certain stages of HD. There may be points where in the course of the disease where tapping is actually painful. So you'd be very sensitive
right.
to the needs of the individual person. It's really, everybody's really unique, and we have to keep that in mind.
That is true. Okay, speaking of that, tell us more about your training in the art of listening.
Okay.
It's really important to me.
I love the title of that class. The art of listening. What I discovered, and for myself and for practically everybody I know, is that we do not know how to listen. We hear and we bombard ourselves with all kinds of noise from our TVs, radios, computers, whatever. But all of that sound environment blocks out our ability to listen. So what's the difference mm-hmm. between listening and hearing? Well, when you hear, you're aware of the presence of a sound. But when you listen, you understand the sound.
Mm.
So when we're talking about listening to people, to others, mostly we just don't do it very well. Because in order to listen, to really listen, we have some habits that we have to give up. First of all, we have to be quiet. We have to learn how to be quiet so we can listen. So when you're in a conversation, don't argue. Don't agree or disagree. You don't interrupt. You don't make any sounds. You don't make any facial expressions. You just listen. And that's a really tricky one, because the thing that prevents us from listening is our desire to talk. We're all talkers. And partly it's sort of a need for gratification.
Oops. I'm really guilty of that.
It's a really hard one to give up. So develop awareness around, in any conversation with anyone. Are you really listening, or, do you have an agenda that you're trying to inject into the conversation? Take turns.
Isn't that a control thing?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And the other thing that it is, we have no clue with how to do this, but we need to listen in the total absence of judgment. I'm going to say that again. The major listening tool is the total absence of judgment.
Mm.
So you're listening to someone. You're not judging them. You're just listening. Your purpose is to understand their point of view. I think that is really, really important globally, but I think within the HD community, listening to those who are actually suffering with this is key. And something I know from what you talk about, how, do the doctors listen to your son? Do they listen to you? No. But even, are you really listening to your loved one all the time? Well, no.
It's hard to do.
It is hard to do. But,
yeah.
We're making an attempt. We do the best we can. We're making an attempt. Then I do believe things go more smoothly.
Mm-hmm. True. Now, we were talking about accepting other people's realities. And how do we interact with them? And what would you say is the best way to do that?
So it starts with listening. And it starts with, being in a place of non-judgment. That sounds real Buddhist, and it is.
Mm-hmm.
Not judging what it is that's being said to you, not taking it personally. Another way that we can, meet someone where they are is to not assume that you know what someone else is thinking or feeling.
Mm-hmm.
Ask them. Just ask. How does that make you feel? Does that please you? Do you have does it make you want to throw up? What's your reaction to them? It's your curiosity. Often, I don't know where that goes when we grow up and become adults. Kids are curious, but adults think that things need to be in a certain way, in a certain box, and we lose that sense of curiosity, even curiosity about someone we love. They're not finite beings. They're infinite beings. We're all infinite beings. We have many levels of personality that don't show themselves at all at the same time.
True.
So could that be something new? Could there be something different that you don't know about that other person? So one of the ways that we can really sort of step into a shared reality is by asking questions.
Is that what you were talking about? Dimensionality?
Yes. Dimensionality is an interesting thing. there's a lot of quantum physics now that says we exist in many dimensions. So I was thinking your question to me was, well, what's dimensionality? What's a dimension?
What is that? How do
and
we
it,
know?
Well, an image that came to me from my childhood. It's like being in a department store. I grew up near Detroit, Michigan, and the main store, department store, was Hudson's. So it was a little. I must be about 4 years old, so I'm small. So you go into this big building, like a skyscraper, with all these tall adults, these big people. You get into the elevator, and the doors close, and everything shakes, and then the doors open, and you're in a completely different world.
Yeah, that's true.
If it was Christmas, you know, we'd be on the top floor. It would be Santa Claus workshop. If it was, God forbid, down in the basement, there'd be all these, you know, really frightening robots, which I learned later were vacuum cleaners.
robots.
So, but, you know, you get off on a different floor, and you're just in a completely different world. One of the interesting things about dimensionality, this is fairly recent science. I would say in the last 10 years, this has become pretty commonplace in the world of quantum physics and neuroscience. But the body doesn't know the difference between whether it's experienced an event or you've imagined that event. The body reacts the same.
Wow.
And maybe not as extremely, but there's still the way the things are firing in the body. If I imagine being at the beach, you know, really, really imagine it, are the same as if I'm actually there.
Mm-hmm.
So when we talk about dimensions, I think we can look at it as we access them through our imagination. So if you have someone who's having an experience that they didn't have. For example, and you'll know what I'm talking about, one person thinks that they slept through the night. The other person knows that they didn't, that they were up all night.
Mm-hmm.
But in the imagination, the one thinks that they were actually asleep.
Yeah, I know exactly.
That's
what you're talking about.
The person who thinks they were up all night is in a different dimension. It's really just that simple. Perception. Does that answer the question? Does that make sense?
Yes and no, because I don't know that many people are, obviously they probably don't know what I'm talking about, but for example, like you said, oh no, I slept all night. Well, no, you didn't. And then I would say, don't you remember doing this and that? No, I don't. And then we would go into a meltdown.
Yeah.
So why is it important to stop saying, don't you remember? That's the question.
Well, so if, in this particular instance, okay, let me think about this for a second. In this particular instance, the physical body, you know, you and your son have had the same physical experience, but, you know, if we exist on, you know, as a physical body, an emotional, mental, and spiritual bodies as well. We exist in these four ways. So just because the physical body is having the same experience doesn't mean that the emotions or the mind or the spirit energy is having the same experience.
Mm-hmm.
So in this case, hard question to answer.
Yeah.
You have to kind of imagine. Basically, one person thinks that something's happened and the other doesn't. It's like, you know, it's Einstein's theory of relativity. And it's, you know, you see this in courtrooms where there's been a car accident. The police have brought in two witnesses, and one remembers a blue car and one remembers a red car. It's the same event. Two different perspectives. And that's really what's happening. So to say to someone, oh, don't you remember that you were up all night? Well, A, you've just told them that they're wrong. Nobody's that. Or you're calling them a liar. which is probably not the case. Are you really rubbing their nose in the fact that they can't remember?
Yeah, I think that's it too.
And what's your purpose?
Right.
What's your point of saying?
So
don't
stop
you
saying, don't you remember?
Well,
if they did, they would say.
Yeah, if they remembered, you wouldn't be having this experience. So my feeling is that if someone doesn't remember a thing, there's no point in saying, don't you remember? Because that memory isn't there. If it ever was memory, a memory that was there, they've lost it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Memory loss is not there. It's not going to come back. It's not going to return. So pressing them for it doesn't serve the person who can't remember. It only serves the person who does remember.
Yeah. We just had a comment in the chat room. I don't know if y'all can hear me. I guess my volume's not working too good today. But Jim Rice, hi, Jim. He made a comment. It says, where did it go? When you say, don't you remember, it
mm-hmm.
means that the person is wrong.
Yeah.
Yeah, so that you don't want to do that. Thank you, Jim. Jim. Yeah. And it's frustrating, you know? It's kind
of
like,
yeah.
If I remembered, I would tell you.
Yeah.
So I've stopped doing that, thanks to you, and I think we've had a lot less, kind of meltdowns as a result of that. So I think that's really a good point. And speaking of interdimensionality or dimensionality, what we were talking about before, let's talk about meditation and why it's so beneficial. And, you and I had talked about the different levels of sleep, and there's some new stuff going on in that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, meditation, became very popular in the 70s with Transcendental Meditation, TM. And since then, there have been thousands of studies, really thousands of studies, on meditation and the benefits. And about 10 years ago, someone put together a study of the studies and synthesized all of the benefits. And I would like to just read a couple of the highlights to you. And this comes from a lovely book. It's called Meditation for Dummies. Steve Bodian. Really great. So anyway, physiological benefits. So this is a benefit, how meditation benefits the body. Decreased heart rate, lower blood pressure, quicker recovery from stress, enhanced synchronization of the left and right hemispheres of the brain, which correlates to creativity and higher functioning. Reduced cholesterol levels, deeper, slower breathing, muscle relaxation, reduction in the intensity of pain, psychological benefits, more happiness and peace of mind, less emotional reactivity, fewer intense negative emotions and dramatic mood swings, and increased empathy. The list goes on. That's just the beginning of it.
Wow.
So the things that struck me were both this enhanced synchronization of the left and right hemispheres of the brain and the fewer mood swings, less intensity of emotion, and reduction of pain. And those things, why isn't everybody doing this? Why isn't everybody meditating? Actually, I have an answer for that. But because the meditation that we're usually taught comes down to us from, it's a thousands of years old tradition that was written down about 5,000 years ago for the first time. So it's meditation that's been written about by men who were scholars and intellectuals and delighted in the mechanics of the mind. They also had the leisure time to do this. So, and this is only recently begun to change. the type of meditation where you're taught to sit still and not move and try to make your mind stop chattering works for maybe about 20% of the population.
Hmm.
And the rest of us, it's just, we can't do it. I tried for years and couldn't meditate. And finally decided I had to teach a class on it so I could learn how to meditate.
You sent me a quickie meditation called Wiggles.
Oh, yeah.
And I have to tell you, for those of you, I just put Meta's meditation blogspot up. Check it out when you get a chance. It's really great. She has put up, how many meditations do you have up there now?
I think I have 4 up there now.
Okay. And she's also, I mean, for a dollar a meditation, I mean, you can't go wrong, but Meta has given us a discount, 33% discount off of her meditations. The code is H4HD, so you get a 33% discount off of a dollar meditation, so that's kind of an incentive. But anyway, the one you sent me, Wiggles, was so fun. I started doing this meditation, and I started yawning and yawning. But afterwards, my gosh, I felt so much better. So it was kind of interesting how, why was I yawning?
Well, because you'd relaxed and you allowed for the oxygen to flow through you better, and the yawn is just an attempt for the body to get more of that, more of what it needs.
Oh, God, I must need more, so I need to do that again.
More sleep. But yawning and that sleepy feeling is often one of the first reactions you get in meditation, because especially in our busy society, we really do need to get into a deeper level of relaxation.
Mm.
And meditation actually takes you into a deeper calm,
right,
and rejuvenation than sleep does.
We were talking about that earlier, too, the gamma and epsilon levels. Can you explain what those are?
Yeah. Our brainwave activity has been studied for a while, primarily through sleep disorder studies. And mm-hmm. so scientists had discovered that we have beta, alpha, theta, and delta, what they call, frequencies that are our normal waking state. And it goes from being highly engaged and focused and concentrating down to levels of deep relaxation. Just, once again, I'd say in the last 15 years, maybe less, they've discovered that there are actually other levels, other frequencies that we operate at below delta, the lowest that they had known. They're calling it epsilon.
Mm.
High states of meditation, extraordinary states of consciousness and inspiration are achieved at this. Our brain is cycling at less than one cycle per second.
Wow.
And they've discovered also that there's a much higher range of frequency, going up to 200 cycles a second, that they're calling lambda, which we experience in states of mystical experience, mm-hmm. shamanic states, and inspiration. And often epsilon and lambda are happening in meditation at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So the point of trying to reach these states, or these frequencies, is that we become better integrated in our thinking. We have better clarity, more compassion, interestingly enough. And the body rejuvenates itself in a state of meditation in a deeper way than it can do in sleep.
So that would be a beneficial thing for our aged years to.
I think particularly for those who are, sort of in early stages mm-hmm. of it, to develop a practice
mm-hmm.
of meditation so that they can continue it
mm-hmm.
as long as possible. And for the caregivers, I think this is so important, because we run, as caregivers, even as of any kind, whether we're parents or taking care of elderly parents or whatever it is, we run out of energy. And then we're less able to handle change. And we're less able to be creative in handling whatever comes our way. So I am a big proponent of meditation, but not the way that it's normally taught. I think that, if I may, doorbells. I think that all of us are already doing something in our day that we can apply meditation principles to. So in all of these little meditations that I make, they're about 2 minutes long, between 1 and 3 minutes. You don't have to sit for 20 minutes. You don't have to sit for an hour. You just find the thing that will allow you to dip into this really calm way of being, rejuvenating, refreshing way of being. And it can be just while you're having your morning cup of coffee. It can be while you're doing the dishes at the sink. It can be when you're in the shower. You know, just anywhere for a couple of minutes. If you're able to do, you know, 2 or 3 minutes five times a day, well, then you've got the, you know, a full 20-minute meditation that somebody else would have to be sitting still for. And you've been able to do it just really quickly.
Yeah, one of the biggest things for me was focusing on the breathing. You know, because we go through stresses and, you know, kind of devastating things sometimes throughout the day, and we forget to breathe.
Yeah.
And if you're not breathing, you're not getting oxygen to the right places. But James was telling me that, I don't know if you're there, James, the meditation, the Wiggles meditation that you sent, you said it gave you energy?
Yeah, I did it in the morning. I try to do it in the morning with my cup of coffee, actually. And I love being around water, so we have a pool, and that's where I do mine every morning. And better, it's amazing. Not only is your voice soothing, but it's easy to stay focused, which is also a major plus to have a successful meditation.
Yeah, and it's a major obstacle. There's John Selby has written a book called Seven Masters, One Path, and in it he describes how what I have found is the trick. If you're looking for a trick for how to meditate, is that you make the mind focus on two things at the same time. So it can be, and the fundamental way is to pay attention to how you're breathing. But then you add something else. You can listen to something. You can hold a stone and, you know, paying attention to the feeling of it while you're paying attention to your breath. Almost anything you can imagine. If it's two physical sensations that the mind has to be dealing with, it's going to shut up. It can't talk. You know, it can't chatter. So part of these little meditations that I do, you're actually doing two things at once, whether you know it or not. And that's part of...
Now, you mentioned something about caregivers. Now, how can caregivers support themselves energetically? Because that's a big one. Through meditation?
I think we lost Meta. She'll be calling back in.
Okay, yeah. Let's take a quick break. Meta was having some issues with her cell phone. I think she'll call back in on Skype. So let's take a quick break, and we'll return after this song. And thank you all for tuning in. Stay tuned.
Run with her twisted, 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 run with her twisted
And we're back. Was that Lady Gaga?
Yes, that was. Yep.
I heard that Lady Gaga and Madonna were going at it.
Yeah, they are. I'll leave it to the two of them.
Oh, my goodness. Anyway, we're Shetty, back,
back
with Meta.
Right.
Hello, everybody. We're back. Hi, Meta. We're back. Had a little a phone issue, but you know.
My phone has decided to turn off and not come back on, so we're trying something else.
Oh, well.
Sorry.
Thank goodness for Skype, right?
You're right.
Okay, so we were talking about caregivers. How can caregivers support themselves energetically? That's a huge one for me.
Oh, it is huge. And I would say that, first of all, make sure that you're taking care of yourself. As a caregiver, you're no good if your emotions are frazzled because you haven't done something to re-energize yourself. So we were talking about meditation. That's the first thing I tell my clients. First thing I tell everybody, don't come talk to me unless you're meditating. If you need help learning how to do it, I can help you with that. But,
okay.
You know, as I've said, it can be quick. It doesn't have to be time-consuming. Often as caregivers, we don't really have the luxury of, you know, going for an hour to get away. Because someone might need us. There might be a call for us. But, you know, surely we can get a couple of minutes.
Mm-hmm.
So while we're doing that, when we're doing meditation as a method, look for the places in your day where you're already doing something that's a little bit calm. Waking up, I have a meditation that's great for waking up, just kind of really filling yourself with oxygen and energy before you get out of bed.
Mm-hmm.
When you're having your morning cup of tea or coffee, just really sinking, feel like you're sinking into it. You can do it in the shower if you sometimes just looking at something beautiful. So for those of you who like flowers, make sure you have a bouquet of flowers. Posies, even something you pick yourself out from the garden or versus somebody else's garden, if you dare. But, you know, having something in your environment that's really beautiful, that really lifts your spirits when you look at it, can be important. Another piece that I would like to add here has to do with the judgment piece. Don't be so hard on yourself.
Mm.
And this is directed to the caregivers.
Yeah.
All of you caregivers are doing a wonderful job. You're doing the best that you can with what you've got to work with. There's a voice that runs in our head 24 hours a day telling us at every opportunity it has of how poorly we're doing something or how we're doing it wrong or how we should be doing it differently. And that voice, that critical voice, it's a liar. Anytime you hear that voice, recognize that whatever it's saying is not true. There's, you know, this is selfish.
Good to hear that.
We all dance with this. We all have this voice. But particularly for those in the HD community, you're not living ordinary lives.
Mm-hmm.
You're not having a normal, you know, the rest of the world would call a normal experience. You're having an extraordinary experience.
Mm-hmm.
So live it in an extraordinary way. So if the critic is normal, get rid of it. Go to something extraordinary and celebrate your courage, your strength, you know, the wonderful things that you are doing. I find that caregivers are not given as much credit as they deserve and
True.
Not as support as they need.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to look for ways to change that. Might be another show.
Very true. Hey, I think James, are you there?
Yeah, Meta read my mind.
Did you have a comment?
I was basically, yeah, it's such a vital point to bring up that individuals in that community who have Huntington's disease can also be the caregiver of someone else who has Huntington's disease.
Yes.
And it's so important, like you said, that we do live extraordinary lives and, you know, to try and be as positive as possible and try to have the quality of life. It does, in my opinion, come with the way you think about your life. And not to be so hard on yourself is a key ingredient, but it's yet very difficult. I know in my household, with my dad and my brother, and I have Huntington's, we all have this support network that I'm blessed to have. But I think it's really important to make mention that individuals in the community who suffer with HD can also be the care provider for others in the household who have it.
Mm-hmm. So even more important to take
double
care
whammy.
Of yourself.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Good point, James. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's see, what were we talking about? You and I were talking about filters and what are they, and what are your thoughts about what happens to our wonderful HDRs?
Beers. Now, let me say before we get too far into this that these are ideas that have occurred to me, and I would really like to have some feedback from the community in the coming months as, you know, as to the validity, whether these really resonate, you know, or if they do, how. Filters are simply the way our mind keeps us from being overwhelmed by information and sensations.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're science, I think, says there's something like 2 billion bits of information in any second. The subconscious mind can see 2 million, can take in 2 million of those, 4 billion, and it allows about 40,000 bits to get to the conscious mind. So, you know, less than 1/100% gets to the rational mind. So what is in place to keep us from being overwhelmed by all of this stuff are filters. At least that's my take on them. So it's very individual as far as what we allow in and what we keep out. It's a sort of personal preference. But what I feel is happening to those who are experiencing HD on an energetic level is that the filters are becoming less concrete. So the filters would be maintained by the left brain. That's the part of the brain that controls the details and organizes things and sees the individual. And as those filters get, like I said, less concrete, the other hemisphere of the brain, the right brain, which is the creative side, the intuitive side, and the side that sees the connection with all life, rather than the detail, it sees the big picture.
Mm-hmm.
That part of the brain is allowed to blossom.
Mm.
So what we find, and this I'm speaking is from the people that I know, what I'm wondering is, you know, feedback please, does this happen to others as well? That from an energetic level, the HDers become more sensitive to everything. So on a physiological level, smells, sounds, colors, the sense of touch, you know, the nerves are just, the sensitivity is heightened.
Mm-hmm.
And on an intuitive level, I think that intuition and psychic ability just grows exponentially. So what that means is, to me, that our HDers are picking up on others' desires or thoughts. Mm-hmm. And when we talk about dimensions, this is where it gets, you know, you're like skating on thin ice here. Is the perception of the HDer their own, or have they picked up someone else's? Have they moved into someone else's dimension? Are they meeting someone else where the other person is?
Mm-hmm.
So
I've heard so many stories, I have to tell you. And we have someone in the chat room, Jen Myers,
mm-hmm.
who says, amen, the filters are breaking down. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
I agree with you, she says.
Right. So
yeah.
So then the question is, does that just mean that everything's breaking down? Or, in fact, is there something else that's emerging that we can celebrate? And my feeling is that, yes, this connection with all life that I mentioned, which is part of the, you know, what the rational mind controls, you know, and doesn't let in so many people, is a wonderful thing. You know, we hope to develop that as in our lives. Creativity is the issue that I really want to hear about. Is it possible for our HDers to become more creative, and how can we support them in that? Does that mean, you know, not in a detail oriented way, not you know, doing something really precise like, what's that needlepoint? You know,
mm-hmm.
but something that's quite free as far as, you know, even finger painting or collage or, you know, who knows what, singing. Those things that we often limit as we grow out of childhood, so I'm speaking about adults then,
right.
you know, maybe we can start looking at creating a quality of life that includes some of these other things that we've left behind, as, you know, left in our childhood. Does that make any sense?
Yes. Well.
Okay.
Yes.
So.
Because as we get older, we learn how to deny those things that, you know, we are told are not really there.
Yes.
So.
Yeah. So I think, you know, we were talking about how can we learn to do that sort of interdimensional dance? How can we learn to accept, you know, a different reality?
Right.
And I think that, you know, remembering how it was, how the world of fantasy was in childhood, and just going with it. And just having fun with it as much as possible.
Do you think that might be one of the reasons why people say that sometimes in HD or some other, you know, brain related conditions that people hallucinate?
I think that we put filters on our brain so that we don't hallucinate as we grow up. And that if these filters are going away, then, you know, we're hardwired for a lot of, what do we want to call it, sort of spiritual experience that in our society, you know, in the Western world, is either the realm of saints or of crazy people. And what I mean by that is that there are parts of the brain where when they put an electrical probe to them, we experience religious ecstasy on the Teresa. It's in normal people that we're hardwired for all kinds of extraordinary visions and, you know, sights and sounds and whatever. So why not support that and celebrate that, you know, if it's actually happening?
I wonder if that's why experiments have been done with, you know, psychotropics, LSD, peyote, and all those kinds of things, where it opens up the pineal gland or whatever area in the brain that is responsible for those experiences.
Yeah, I think that the drug just serves to remove the filter.
Mm-hmm. So do you think in HD then these filters are being slowly diminished?
Could you repeat that? Sorry, I couldn't hear you.
Do you think maybe in Huntington's disease or in other brain-related conditions that these filters are slowly being diminished?
Yes, I do.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously other things are diminishing too, but with this, these particular filters, which the rational mind, what I call the rational mind, is the, you know, the left brain, left brain controls the right side of the body. You know, as they begin to diminish,
mm-hmm.
it just frees many of these other aspects. Now, the difficulty, of course, is that what it's freeing is not what we consider normal. You know, most of the world doesn't consider this normal. But I want to reiterate, you're not having a normal experience. You're having an extraordinary experience.
Mm-hmm.
So when we try to keep it in the box of normal, and we try to squash ourselves as caregivers and the HDers as those having this experience, we try to squash them into the box to keep normalcy in our lives. We do that. I think we do that because, you know, we're desperately trying to keep them here. We're trying to keep them on the planet. We don't want to lose them. We love them. But also, we don't know what else to do. You know, we have no support for doing it a different way.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that happens, and we need to be aware of this, is that as caregivers, you feel like you're going to lose touch with reality yourself if you don't try to maintain this kind of normalcy.
Mm-hmm. I think people have a fear of being called nutty or crazy, don't you?
Yeah, well, you know, I have a friend who's got a card on her piano that says, I wish my family would stop pretending we're normal. There's no such thing. It does not exist.
Right. Golly.
What people think is normal is basically boring. And everybody's got an issue. It may not be as physically obvious,
mm-hmm.
but I have yet to meet someone I would call normal. So I think that as a community, and especially if we can do it as a community, just get over it. Get over it already. There's something else that can be done that's really splendid. But being normal is not it.
Okay.
Got that?
What is Radiant Sutras?
The Radiant Sutras. The Radiant Sutras, and I'm not going to be able to tell you what year they were written in, but probably 2,500 years ago, more than 2,000 years ago. And they are a list of 112 different ways to meditate.
Ooh.
And very simply, you know, just a couple of lines of poetry. That's beautiful. So Lauren Roach has done a translation of them that's just exquisite. But it gives you the sense that what we were talking about earlier, there are many, many ways to meditate.
Mm-hmm.
Many places to do it. You know, the Buddha teaches that there are four ways: lying down, sitting, standing, or walking. So, you know, within that, there's quite a range.
Mm-hmm.
And this particular, the Radiance Sutras, you've asked me a question I can't answer, but it's in Indian mythology, Hindu mythology, there's a husband and wife, and she's asking him, you know, my beloved, how do I meditate? And he answers her.
Oh,
poem.
Okay.
So it's lovely.
Oh, wow.
If you're on my blog, meditation, there's a page called Resources, and I have listed about a dozen, maybe less, books and websites that
okay.
I love.
Super.
Have to do with.
I apologize to our guest in the chat room. I misspelled it. It's Radiant Sutras, not Radian. Sorry about that. And
like real,
and we've posted meta-tation.blogspot.com. So anyway, sorry about that. Wow, there's a lot of food for thought here. I'm going to be re-listening to this show, and I'm going to be going to your website. And again, I would like to invite everyone to go to meditation's link, meditation. blogspot.com, sorry, and get the meditations there for, and the coupon code is H4HD. Get a 33% discount off the meditations, and try them. They're really fun, and they'll either energize you or make you tired. Probably depending on what you need, right?
Yeah.
But I've really enjoyed doing that wiggle one for sure. Meta, is there anything else that we wanted to talk about that I've forgotten?
I think we've covered most of what we discussed beforehand. You had asked me the question about moving into the HD or JHDers world. What could we do to better understand them? And I had the thought that came to me was primarily to listen to them and to honor their perceptions. I think that as a community you face a really difficult wall to climb over, which is the medical community. I find with the doctors that I know, and generally the way that they're trained, it's not exactly their fault, but they're trained to be the authority and to not take anything under discussion or under advisement. And I guess my point is that that needs to change, and that the HD community is actually on the forefront of trying to change this. The doctors need to listen to the patients. And so if you're, as caregivers, begin that process by listening to your loved ones, listen to the HDers, and really respect and honor their perception, because they're the ones who are having this experience. It will be different than what you assume it will be. It could be different than what you expect it to be. So be open, be non-judgmental, be better listeners. And the other thing, be less attached to your own point of view. And that
ooh, that's
everybody.
Hard to do sometimes. Wow.
Melissa, we have Shannon that's on with us right now.
Oh, okay,
mm-hmm.
Great.
Shannon, you're live with Meta.
Hi, Shannon.
Hi. Hi, good evening. How are you?
I'm so happy to have you call in.
Hi.
Do you have a question?
I do. You know,
okay.
I hear you talk about the caregivers and, you know, finding peace. And I have HD. I was
mm-hmm.
diagnosed in 19. My mother, she emotionally and mentally has been suffering from since I was, as far as I can remember. So we kind of suffered
mm-hmm.
under her a little bit as children. We were left alone with her. She was our primary caregiver. And I'm finding now, being 27 and having HD starting to affect me a little bit more, and obviously her much more, I'm
mm-hmm.
finding myself getting overwhelmed with her and getting aggravated and annoyed very, very quickly. I basically have to walk away from her most of the time, or literally bite my tongue. Because I think just from childhood aspect, I have lost all like patience and reserve, and so yes, I know that she has HD and we're suffering in the same boat, but I've kind of lost that for her.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm kind of curious if you have any suggestions on how I can come to some sort of peace or understanding or something I can say to myself to even just bear with her, because I don't blame her. It's not her fault. So I don't want to just walk away from her and be angry from her, because we are in the same boat.
Excellent question. One of the hard questions. First of all, your question is absolutely perfect, because what it shows is that you're looking for a way to take care of yourself. And no matter who you are in the world as a caregiver, you have to do that. So I actually have a little technique that I will share with you, which partly, you know, you're being overwhelmed by this. The feeling is that you've got you're holding in an incredible amount of energy. So that actually you don't need to express it to her, but you do need to release it. You do need to let it out.
Right.
So you go out in the car and you know, get away from people, and you take a really, really, really huge breath and you let it out in a scream. One really loud, short scream. Or allow a longer one if you need to. But, you know, you're not doing it because you're angry. You're doing it because there's all of this built up and you need to clear, you know, you need to clear your mind, basically. So that's, I mean, that's actually one of my meditation techniques, is particularly if you live near a train, you go and do it when the train's going by.
That's a great idea.
But to let that out will give you, I expect, a little more...
It's been a little frustrating for me because my grandmother died from, passed away from Huntington's when I was like 12. And it was a very taboo thing. We didn't talk about. My mother, you know, hid it and hid it and hid it. And when I was 16, I figured out what was going on. And like I said, at 19, I got tested. So my diagnosis confirmed her. And so from the beginning of all of this, I'm Shannon. I'm the strong one. I'm the one that can always handle it. I'm the one that my dad calls for assistance and help. I'm the one that has to handle her. I'm the only one that can handle her. You know, and it's like I feel like I haven't had a time to grieve even for my own diagnosis, because I am always the one who's having to take care of everything. And like it's like, hey, I'm sick too, people. Like, you know, she's not the only one. I mean, it's pretty rampant in our family. My uncle is passing away from it at the moment as well. So it's, like, really overwhelming. And it's, like you said, trying to find time for yourself seems almost impossible, you know, when I, too, am afflicted. And it's hard to say no and back up. And I haven't found out how to do that yet.
Practice. You have to practice saying no. It doesn't come easily, because we're taught that it's not okay to say no. But in your case, I would be really warrior-like about it. Not 24 hours a day, but what area do you live in?
New York. I'm upstate New York.
So what kind of community is there?
ADD-wise?
Yeah.
There isn't really much of any. I drive an hour and a half to Albany to go see a HD doctor. My parents are on Long Island. They see people on Long Island. Jen in the chat room is the closest person I found. She's close to me more than anybody else that I've met so far. Actually, very oddly enough, once I met somebody at Walmart who had been talking about it, and I happened to interrupt her conversation, and even they lived 2 hours away, even though I did speak with them a few times on the phone. So I'm pretty isolated in that sense
Where
I live.
So so the internet community.
Yeah, I do the internet.
Yep.
The chat rooms and such. I'd love to go to convention, but it's always someplace I can't get to.
Shannon,
that's so wonderful for you to call in, and you may contact us at any time, okay?
Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Yeah, we're here for you. And if there's anything that we can do.
All right. Thank you so much. Have a good evening.
It was wonderful of you to call in. Thank you so much for your comments and questions.
Thank you. Bye.
Okay, honey. Take care. And thank you, Jen, for being such a great support. That's awesome. Oh, we just lost Meta again.
Yep, so I have to call back in.
Okay, well, let's take another quick break, and then we can come back. Hopefully we'll get Meta back. And if not, we'll end. But hang on, everybody. We'll be right back. Having little gremlins here today. James, are you with me?
Yep.
Okay, we're out.
Hey, there he is.
And it looks like Matt is with us, so we're having just a little bit of gremlins today. Hold on. James?
Yes, I'm actually waiting to hear if Clarice is calling back in because we're having some major technical issues.
Okay. And I can't pull Meta back out. Can you get her from the screening room?
Meta, are you with us?
I'm with you. Yeah.
Okay, my button shows that we're in the screening room. But I believe we're out now in the show. So if y'all can hear me, text me a little thing there in the chat room. Say, yes, we can hear you, so that I know that we're out and we can go on with the show. So, Mary, can you hear us out there? Give us a little text quickly and let us know.
Yes.
Okay.
Sorry about that, guys.
For those of you listening out there, we have a little
today.
We have a crazy program that it gets stuck sometimes. It's just a little control panel, and it's crazy sometimes. But anyway, we're back. And can you hear Meta? Let's see, Dan, can you hear Meta?
Yes, Meta, I wanted to address Shannon's question a little bit more, if you can hear me.
Yes.
It's really important for her and for anyone who's in that situation to make sure you're taking care of yourself. The feeling I'm getting is that at least an hour a day, you really need to be away and doing something that's not related to the person you're caring for at all. And an hour doesn't sound like very much time, but I know that as caregivers, we don't take that time. So it's a big deal. And not just to sleep, because that's a different issue. But to take an hour and engage in an activity of some sort that's just for you. It's going to be so beneficial.
And that's the hardest thing to do, isn't it? I mean,
well, and what makes it hard? What makes it hard is the belief that it's hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
If we believe that it's difficult, then it is. So we want to tweak that belief and say, no, finding an hour for myself isn't what is hard. Spending 24 hours a day thinking about someone else is what's hard.
Mm-hmm. Right. I just need to change my thinking about it. Right.
Mm-hmm. It's your perspective.
Yeah, true.
But if we think it's hard, then it will be. So we really want to, check that belief at the door if we can.
Okay, I've got to listen to your advice.
This is nice speaking to you.
Okay.
Now, I know that you do this, so you get in the bathtub, and I know that you get away getting up.
Yeah, that's kind of my place to go, is in a tub of water. I don't have a pool or a spa or anything, but I'll go get in a tub of water and just kind of chill there for, half an hour or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of my way of meditating.
Today, 2-30 minutes, then you've got an hour. If you do 3-20 minutes, it doesn't have to be all in one block of time.
I'll be
attuned. Well, maybe you have to branch out and find something else that you really enjoy.
Mm-hmm.
It could be, for someone, it could be gardening. Be creative.
Yeah. So if there was one thing that you could leave with our listeners, what would be maybe the most important thing that you can think of right now to help our HDers and our caregivers? Is it the meditation?
I think actually it's the listening.
Okay.
Because it's not just listening to someone else, it's listening to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
It brings in the non-judgment, the acceptance, self-love, self-care.
Mm-hmm.
So between those two things. That they'll I think, bring the most benefit.
Good. Good point.
Yeah.
Well.
Okay.
Let's be good listeners.
And listen to yourself.
So much,
listen
man.
To your heart. You know,
yeah.
If your heart's telling something, go, mind it. Honor it.
Listen to your heart.
Yeah.
Good advice. Well, we have some announcements. James, are you with me?
I don't hear him.
Is he there? I think we may have lost him. Just want to remind folks to go to the James Falvano fan page on Facebook. We've just published the June magazine. Let me see if I can get that link real quick. It's beautiful. He did a wonderful job. And Clarice. It's the James Falvano Huntington's Disease Film Project. And the June magazine is out. It's gorgeous. It's international participation in different languages. So it's wonderful. Just wanted to remind people about the magazine. Also, the HuntingtonsPost.org, we just launched that. Upcoming shows, June 18, the HD View with Dr. Beth John. June 25, the HD View. Reach 2 HD Prana will be back to give us an update on the PBT2 clinical trial. And July 2nd, the HD View. Again, Ask Dr. Goodman Show. July 9, the HD View. Phil Hart will be here to give us a disability update. Just wanted to thank everyone for tuning in and logging on. And thank my dear, dear friend, Meta O'Rear. Thank you so much for joining us today. Maybe we can have a regular show with Meta. I don't know. We'll have to talk to her about that.
Yeah, I'll talk to your listeners about that.
Yeah, and don't forget to contact me at healthforhdinternational.org. Find us on Facebook, Help for HD, the HD View. Find breaking news at the Huntington Post, huntingtonspost.org. Come back and listen to the recorded episodes. Get the free app on the road, Help for HD app, at Help for HD International, and we have a face.org. Also available on the app is the original mobile connection to education resource and information about JHD and HD. And thank you, everyone. Good night. And we will talk to you next week. Okay, everybody. I'm going to close off the show. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. I just got a message from Meta because she had dropped as well, and she said, energy gremlins, I love it. So, y'all, thank you again for tuning in. Love you all. Talk to you next Monday. Have a great week. Later.